Hey, 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 everyone. It's Indy here with Veer Queer. Today we're here with our special guest, Kuma, and we're also here with Julian as well. Kuma is an intersex activist. Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
Thanks for
having me on.
Yeah, hey, thank you. Hey. Welcome to the studio.
So I guess Mai isn't here either.
Oh.
Because Indisha's like, Julian's here too, and so is Kuma. But I was like, but so is Mai.
Oh yeah, Mai is, no, Mai is here too.
Fuck Mai. No, you're good.
Right. Are
you ready for the holidays?
I'm glad to like not have... I guess I'm glad to not be working, but also if I'm not working, I'm not making money, so...
You're right. It's like one of the, it's, you do a lot of freelancing gig, right? So it's like the days you're not working, that's money you're losing.
Yeah.
Oh, that sucks. Mm-hmm. So it's not like you get like paid time off. It's literally like as if you had an hourly job, like the days you don't work, that's money you're not
making. Yeah.
Oh, fuck, dude, I'm sorry.
It's okay. That's why, you know, it's the glory of freelancing, you know? It's like, I don't really have a boss.
No.
So it's pretty sweet. But also, like, I have to worry about... I live paycheck to paycheck, so...
Right. So it's like, wait, am I going to be working enough to like, pay this month's rent? Like, it's not, like, a steady paycheck like I have. Like, no, I couldn't live like that. That's why I couldn't be doing freelance work. Because I, like, need to know if I'm going to have money that month.
Right. Well, you're a Virgo, so...
Yeah, don't at me. It's fine. I get like dragged for that every day by my partner. My partner's a Pisces. What's up, Indisha?
Oh, my partner's a Pisces too.
Yeah.
Like my partner could legit be like, I would swim across the ocean for you, and I'm like, I mean, that sounds romantic, but I feel bad you don't have a boat. Like that's.
I mean, it's like technically you'd want to be in the water anyway, since you're a Pisces. So it's like, are you really doing it for me, or are you doing it for you? Like, Pisces secretly want to be mermaids anyway. Speaking of mermaids, have you guys heard of that new show, Tidelands?
No.
Mm-mm.
It's, right, so far, it's annoyingly straight, but it is about mermaids that deal drugs, so I feel like it's perfect for both Elise and I, because, like, she's the Pisces, so she's like, oh, yeah, mermaids, and I'm the bud tender, so I'm like, oh, yeah, drug dealer.
What kind of drugs do mermaids deal?
You know what? They haven't even said yet. They haven't even said what the product is. And another funny thing, I was, while watching the show, the leader, the head, like, mermaid mistress person who's, like, the head of the mermaid cult, she's an awful drug dealer. She, like, she's really bad at it. Like, I just, like, talk to the screen all the time. I'm like, I would never do that. Like, what is she doing? Anyway.
I wonder if they sell, like, I wonder what kind of, like, other drugs they would sell if you're a mermaid that's, like...
It would probably be, like...
Coral?
Clownfish, like, they would, like, excrete...
Algae?
Something from clownfish and be like, this is a drug you have to take.
Definitely some type of hallucinogen, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was about to say, can you, what if you, like, put, like, algae, like, in between, like, your teeth and, like, your gums, like, kind of, like, chewing tobacco?
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that would be a thing.
Right, and people were like, let's go get kelp.
Let's go get kelp. Let's get high off kelp.
Oh, seaweed.
Seaweed!
Yeah. Probably, like, some kind of fish that has, like, a neurotoxin, like blowfish or something.
Yeah.
That's what exactly because, like, they have those frogs.
The second mermaid drug.
I like the direction this podcast has gone. I was unprepared for this, but I like it.
I'm so glad.
I'm also just going to put out there that lobsters are scorpion mermaids.
Oh, wow.
And is this a hill you're going to die on? Or is this like fact? Because what? Scorpion mermaids?
Well, if you think about it,
okay,
they're like scorpions
break it down
that
for
live
me.
In the ocean with a tail, and they're mermaids. They don't have any legs.
Yeah.
Oh
my god.
The same could also be said of crawfish.
Yeah.
Oh
they,
yeah.
They look like little scorpions.
Wait.
Scorpion mermaids.
What, Indy?
Yeah.
What, Indy?
Not having legs. I recently found out that there are these things called like legless lizards.
What?
Not snakes. Yes.
Aren't they just eels?
No.
Or slugs?
It looks like a lizard in the face.
snake in the body. It's fascinating.
So are they are they land or sea creatures?
They are land.
I don't know how I feel about this information you just told me.
It's also uncomfortable. And then,
I'm really uncomfortable.
Like, I guess we're doing this, brain. I mean, my mind was blown. I didn't think it was real until I had to actually Google it. But yeah.
Speaking of, like, legless lizards, I have a really funny story when I was a kid. So I used to have this really bad phobia of snails and slugs when I was a child. I don't know why. Like, when... Why's looking at me like, why? When I was a kid, I would go to like my grandparents' house, and whenever there was a snail or a slug like on the step, I'd start crying. So I'd make my dad like carry me like to the door, because just the sight of that just made me so uncomfortable. And I think I don't know if this was before or after that, but I definitely remember vividly as a child like. Doing Easter egg hunting in the backyard of my grandparents' house, and I picked something up that I thought was an egg, but it was a snail, and I like dropped it and I screamed. So I don't know if those are related, like if that happened and then I became afraid of them, or like if I was already like feeling a type of way and then that should make it worse.
Mm-hmm.
But now I think I'm okay. Maybe I should unpack this to my therapist, like, hey, what does this mean?
I'm having these dreams.
About slugs and snails.
That's where you need to get salt.
Oh yeah, but then I would feel bad. Like I couldn't do that.
Yeah,
I guess so. Like they're already minding their own business, like out in the wild. Like why would I like fuck up their shit even more?
This is so funny how you were afraid of snails and slugs. Because when I was a kid, I used to actually keep them as pets.
What?
Okay, you were a bug kid.
I wasn't a bug kid. I just thought snails were cool. Just snails. I would just collect them. I don't know, something about them. I was like, they're cool. They're slimy. They have shells. I was like, chill with it. I don't know.
Anyway. <That's
nice. laughs> We're like, all right, cool. And Disha likes bugs.
So I love how, like, we were talking earlier about there was really no, like, set intro or anything. We're just kind of like... None of this is going to make sense, and it's going to lead into it. But it actually really does lead into the conversation.
Yeah.
In the sense of, like, we're talking about animals that don't necessarily fit certain phenotypes.
Oh. Yeah.
Snails and slugs that are hermaphroditic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of an amazing opening.
Wow.
To what we were going to talk about.
We definitely planned this.
I love it.
Absolutely, 100%.
Yes. This is the stuff we talk about all the time.
No, but I mean, like, we brought you on because really, the three of us, and probably other people in the LGBTQ community as well, don't know much about the intersex community. And I know you do a lot of work in that with you being intersex yourself. And so we were hoping that we could talk to you a little bit sort of like intersex 101, like if that's cool with you. And
absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, but, you know, obviously if we're crossing the line or anything like that, please let us know, because we want to make sure that while you're giving us the emotional labor to like educate us, we want to make sure that you're also safe and feeling
and
comfortable.
Listeners.
Which we also totally appreciate, by the way, for that emotional labor and breaking things down for us.
Yeah, seriously, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So when I give talks, I usually will say something to the effect of, you are welcome to ask any question, but I am not obligated to answer. And I will let you know if there is a question that is uncomfortable or that I would prefer not to answer, but very rarely does that happen because I'll just put it all out there.
So. Right.
So I guess the first obvious question for me personally would be, what made you want to become more involved in the community?
That's a great question.
Oh,
so,
thank you.
I'm actually the co-founder of the Houston Intersex Society, which is the only intersex organization in the state of Texas.
Oh.
And the way that came about was... the other co-founder and I knew each other as teenagers. We went to an LGBT youth group here in Houston called Hatch. Sat next to each other every Friday night for years. Never knew the other person was intersex.
Wow.
There was a lot of shame and stigma about it. And we were both told by parents and by doctors that we were like super rare and that we'd never meet another person like ourselves. Mm-hmm. So we sat there feeling so isolated and like ashamed, right? Mm-hmm. And we never, like, we were both in this like queer safe space, but never said we were intersex and never talked about it. Mm-hmm. So when we reconnected as adults, we were like, nobody should ever feel that way. And so that was in 2012. We reconnected and we're like, let's do something about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We started our organization with the intention of being like a social and support group.
Yeah.
But we found that there was really a lot more need for education mm-hmm. and for advocacy.
Yeah.
So we've kind of shifted from doing like social and support. We still do some stuff like that, but we do a lot of education, advocacy work. And then as individuals, you know, separate from the organization, we do legislation and lobbying mm-hmm. as well.
Wow.
So
do you mind if I ask, at the time when you were going to Hatch, did you identify as intersex at the time?
Not really, because mm-hmm. I
language wasn't there, right?
The language wasn't really there, but mm-hmm. at the same time, like, I've always known, just, and I guess we'll kind of touch back on that a little bit later.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always known physically that I was intersex. I did not have the word intersex until I was in my
20s.
Yeah. No, but also,
I get that.
It kind of goes hand in hand with that shame and stigma. Like, it was also really difficult to like be in that space. Mm-hmm. And I think because also like, transness was something that was like just really starting to be more comfortable for people to claim.
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. not that it was anything new. It was just that people were more comfortable starting to claim transness mm-hmm. or like, genderqueer kind of stuff. So there were a few youth that were trans identified, and it was mm-hmm. this concept of like transitioning to like their true selves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that was something that I couldn't really even grasp as a concept, because
mm-hmm.
I couldn't figure out who I was, because I didn't know what I was to begin with,
right.
kind of thing. And it was like, even in this queer space, it was still a very, very binary space.
Yeah.
Even in the concept of like, all the girls, for the most part, there are either lesbian or bi, mm-hmm. and all the boys that are there are either gay or bi.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had, you know, there's the one token trans girl and the one token trans guy. And so I just kind of, when I went into the space, I believe at the time I was read as like a gay boy, so it was like, okay, I'm a gay boy, whatever. Like, for me, it was that was my safe haven away from. At the time, I lived in Tomball, and also this is kind of funny. At the time, Hatch met at a church. My parents, who are both they're my adoptive parents, they're very white, mm-hmm. very straight, very religious. They drove me down there every Friday night for years, waited mm-hmm. in the parking lot to make sure that I wouldn't leave
mm-hmm.
because they thought it was like an anti-queer program.
Wow.
Right.
Mm.
Wow. That's like...
backfired a little bit.
Yeah. That's like something, not like in those exact words I heard, but when I used to volunteer with Hatch, I used to be a Hatch youth facilitator last year. And I think Mai does it right now.
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking to one of the facilitators who's a volunteer there. And he talked about how when it first started as a church, like people, like it was a lot easier to like go to this like queer space, like in stealth because it was at a church.
Like,
you know what I mean?
So for our listeners that don't know, Hatch is a youth program that is put on by the Montrose Center, which is our LGBT like resource center. QI plus, center here in Houston.
Yeah, and Hatch Youth is a safe space for...
Right, for youth. For youth. Queer youth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we spoke with one of the people that work there, Anna Garza, one of our old seasons. So if no one knows what Hatch is, go ahead and look it up and listen to all the other episodes. Hey!
I was going to say that you said something just a second ago that I really leveled with, that you mentioned how you would see your body and you knew that you were intersex, but you didn't have the language for that, right? Like, I really level with that, like, on an emotional level as being mm-hmm. non-binary, because I always knew that there's something happening, but I didn't have the language for that. Like, right. I look at old pictures of myself in high school, and I'm like, I tried really hard to present feminine, and even then I knew, like, deep down that this isn't what I am or what I wanted to be. And it wasn't until when, it's like you said, like, transness, like, has always been around. It's just now people are being more comfortable in, like, claiming that, that finally once, you know, like, the non-binary identities, like, whether if you're bi-gender, agender, genderqueer, gender fluid, whatever, like, once those terms came up and that language became more readily available, it's like, oh, that's what I am. Now this makes a lot more sense.
Right. Mm-hmm. So, like, I guess if we can take a few steps sure. back and do kind of a quick intersex 101.
Yeah. So I was
which might be helpful, because right. I think some of the listeners might be like, okay, I have this word now and I don't know what it means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So intersex is when someone is born with a body that is, that has anatomical, hormonal, or genetic, usually mm-hmm. chromosomal traits
yeah.
that makes their body somewhere in between what is considered typical for male or female.
Uh-huh.
So the old word for that was hermaphrodite, but mm-hmm. we don't really use that anymore. Mm-hmm. Some people use it as a reclaimed term for themselves, mm-hmm. but it's also kind of misleading because it implies that someone has both sets of fully functioning genitalia, mm-hmm. which doesn't really happen with uh-huh. humans.
Right.
And so with intersex, it is something that is very medicalized. Mm-hmm. There are over 30 different diagnoses, for intersex, mm-hmm. but it's also something that many in the community are really trying to educate about and move away from, like, just being this medicalized mm-hmm. thing.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's important to know is that we talked about that for some people it's noticeable at birth. Some people don't mm-hmm. find out about it until puberty yeah. or until they don't have a puberty. Other people find out when they are trying to either get someone pregnant or get mm-hmm. pregnant, and then they'll go to a doctor and they'll find out that they have intersex traits. So intersex at birth, mm-hmm. when that means when someone's born, they look at the, mm-hmm. the child and they can say, this child has this, or they use language, this child is intersex. Sometimes in the medical community, they mm-hmm. use the term DSD. Or disorder of sexual development. Mm-hmm. I know everybody kind of made a face yeah. there. So there are a lot of people in the yeah. intersex community that really are advocating for the use of the term intersex mm-hmm. over
yeah.
DSD. Some people have shifted DSD to mean difference of sexual development.
I see. Okay.
Mm-hmm. But it's already been softer. Established yeah. As, yeah, yeah. as disorder. So that's yeah. that's like for me as an individual, like
that would hurt.
It's yeah. still uncomfortable.
Yeah,
it
stings a little. Yeah.
Right. So the rate at birth is about the same as twins. So it's about 1.7% of wow. the population wow. that at birth they can look at the child and say this child is intersex mm-hmm. or has a DSD or whatever, you know, language mm-hmm. they're going to use. So I mentioned before, like, the old language for that was hermaphrodite. They also used to use words like male pseudo-hermaphrodite, female pseudo-hermaphrodite. So that's a lot of the old yeah. language that,
yeah.
as much as I would like to say they don't use anymore, they still yeah. sometimes mm-hmm. use that, which is why the education is so important. Mm-hmm. So one of the other things to note is that when we talk about intersex, and we use language like intersex traits, because I always try to make it a point that, like, intersex is an intersectional identity for mm-hmm. Those mm-hmm. of us that also identify as LGBT, because there are some folks in the intersex community that don't identify as LGBT. Mm-hmm. So it's this, like, weird space yeah. of, like, having differences that can very easily be combined with gender or with sexuality, like how we relate to our bodies yeah. can you know, also impact how we identify our gender, which can also impact how we define our sexuality.
Yeah.
So for a lot of people, like, all of these things go together. And mm-hmm. for some people, they're like, nope, I am this, and my sexuality is this, and I don't want to be lumped in with LGBT.
Right.
That's so we try to navigate, you know, this very, very large community mm-hmm. of people while also making it a point to uplift and recognize those intersex people that do mm-hmm. identify as LGBT mm-hmm. and some people that don't necessarily identify as queer or trans, but still opt to be tagged on to the LGBTQ, et cetera, et cetera, because of either things that are relatable or mm-hmm. as like a political stance, right? Like a mm-hmm. sociopolitical.
Being marginalized.
Right. Mm-hmm. As like part of a marginalized community. And because, so I did an interview with an OBGYN recently. Mm-hmm. And one of the questions that popped up was like the bathroom issue. And I found that I think it was easier to explain like that's not an intersex issue. Like that's, that mm-hmm. is an issue that is solely based on like demonizing trans people and intersex people get harmed in the crossfire.
Yeah.
And I think that that is one of the reasons why there's a lot of intersex folks that, that embrace like being tagged onto that, but also use like the being part of the larger LGBTQ community to advocate for our trans mm-hmm. friends and for our, you know, queer friends as well.
Mm-hmm. I know that you can't speak for a whole community, but I just wanted to know, in your opinion, why do you think some intersex people don't identify as LGBT?
It's their choice, right?
I mean, like, no? I mean, it is, but it's just that I always hear some of them do, some of them don't.
Yeah. Some don't intersex people may be heterosexual.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's that, obviously. There are some people that do identify as, I guess, cis and straight, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever that means. And, well, so I think the concern is that there are those people, and I have friends that are, you know, not queer and not trans-identified that happen to be intersex, and they still... Yeah. Support the queer and trans community. Mm-hmm. I also know intersex people that identify as straight and not trans and are very adamant that intersex not be included in LGBT. Mm-hmm. There are some folks that are fairly homophobic and transphobic. So, I mean, and part of that too is that it's a very large community of a lot of different people with different... experiences and beliefs and you know it so it's great for the people that will, but I mean even like trying to educate within the community is
seems hard.
Like I said, the only reason why I ask that question is because I also know non-binary people that don't identify as trans for like one reason or another, and so that's just sort of like why I want to ask, because if I can go on Google and it gives me like this reason, but it's like I'm still not going into this knowing like what intersex really is though. So that's why I want to ask, because now I'm sort of getting like more information about what and mm-hmm. what the intersex community really is, and I already feel enlightened in like the last
I didn't know a lot about it either, and which is gonna be like what's gonna lead into when it comes like going off of what Julian was asking when it comes to the intersections between like intersex people and the LGBTQ community, what would you as an intersex person like to see so that you know, or like, I don't know, what type of education or I don't know, what difference would you like to see? Because I don't hear a lot about intersex people at all. And I consider myself to be pretty in tune with queer media for the most part, but that's usually a part that I don't usually hear about. So like, I don't know, in your utopia, what would you like for people to know off the bat, you know? Because I know you do it a lot and you do a lot of activism and everything else, but I don't know, what can we do as members of the community, you know, with you guys? You know, yeah, I don't know if it's coming across right, you know?
No, so now's a great time to talk about some of the issues that the intersex community faces. Woo! So one of the biggest at least within North America and several other countries, mm-hmm. there. So first and foremost, I'm going to lay it out there that there are some countries where infanticide is something that happens when mm-hmm. a child is born intersex. Mm-hmm. For the most part, that doesn't happen in North America. So mm-hmm. that's not something that I really speak a lot to or that my organization does a lot with. But that is something that does happen.
Yeah.
So one of the largest issues, at least within North America and many other countries, mm-hmm. is the issue of infant genital mutilation surgeries, or what is called normalization surgeries. So when an intersex infant is born and mm-hmm. they have genitalia that is uniquely intersex, oftentimes they are immediately subjected to cosmetic surgeries on healthy tissue that are completely medically unnecessary, mm-hmm. that attempt to make their genitalia appear more binary. And so some of the problems with that, obviously, you know, you are cutting on healthy tissue. Mm-hmm. So there's also, it's forced sterilization. Mm-hmm. They're removing children's gonads. There's hardly ever just one surgery. You're talking about infant tissue. So there's scar tissue as the child grows. There's, repeated surgeries to correct various different things and change things as the child grows. There's urinary issues. There's often sexual dysfunction. There's nerve damage. We know people that have... they're in their 40s and they've had, you know, over 25 surgeries. Wow. There's also, you know, for a lot of children, they will try to create a neo vagina for them, which means that they have to dilate, or the parents have to dilate a small child, which means inserting things into their body to keep the vagina open, which, as you can imagine, is
painful.
Is painful, but it's also incredibly disturbing,
inhumane.
Right?
And just inhumane as a child,
right? So there's
I'm horrified right now.
Like, you know, when you're just as if cutting on someone's body, you know, alone. One of the issues that goes hand in hand with that is that the way that these surgeries are done, they basically measure the size of the child's phallus mm-hmm. or clitoris, and they say, well, this is too big to be a clitoris, so it needs to be removed. So they're doing clitorectomies on people. So there's a mm-hmm. mindset that anyone who is considered quote-unquote female, on a side note, it's really difficult to talk about intersex without using, gendered language.
Yeah, right.
So
because
just
that's
like
what we have right now.
Right.
Yeah.
So you know, I'm you can't see me, but I'm always doing like these air quotes because
vagina
does not necessarily mean like female.
Right.
Penis doesn't always mean male, but it's hard to talk about this without
this is what the medical people talk. This is how they talk about these things.
Right, exactly. Know? Like, we know for the sake of the conversation, we have to use gendered language, mm-hmm. but we get what you're trying to say. Yeah. Indisha, what did you want to add?
So what you're telling me is something that, Kuma, I had absolutely no idea. So with all that being said, if someone is having to be subjected to basically this culture of shame from basically the second they're born, are there any, like, I don't know, do they, like, give intersex children therapists for this type of stuff? Like, do they try to, like, I don't know, be like, are you okay? Because now, like, I didn't know that that was, like it was ongoing for so long, and this isn't something I have to actually deal with, so I couldn't even imagine having to go through that. But I'm just saying, as a person growing up having to constantly be violated multiple times, like the leftover from that, like what does that look like in that term, as far as the medical field is concerned, since it's all, you know, medical, you know, do they put that into consideration at all? Like, are they, is it, I feel like this whole thing, the way it sounds, is completely dehumanizing. So when you're done doing all that and quote unquote normalizing someone, like, what do they do for this person's mental health is basically my question. Is that a thing?
I will get to that in just a second. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I've never
heard of it, so I'm like, this is just like, wow, you know? So yeah, keep going, sorry.
No, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. So we talked about the clitorectomies. Mm-hmm. The opposite of that is if they decide that the phallus is too large, they will sew up any vaginal opening or anything like that and decide that the child is, you know, quote unquote male.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So the way that this is done, the thought behind this is very, very, number one, it's anti-female sexual pleasure in the future. It's number two, very, very heterosexist.
Right.
There's so many people in our community that get told that they need this neo-vagina for their husband. Yes, that language, that phrase is, there's so many people that share being told that phrase. That this is done so that they can have sex with their husband. So it's also, it's all of this is done out of a fear of non-binary, right? Non-binary bodies, potential for non-binary genders, and non-heterosexual sexualities in the future. So,
yeah,
like those things are important to keep in mind.
Yeah.
Right. The other thing is that in addition to these surgical procedures, which sometimes also happens later on in life, there's forced hormonal treatments. So for some people, obviously they're having gonads removed. Mm-hmm. They're not having any natural hormone producing organs. So they're forced to take hormones for whatever gender someone else has decided that they are.
Right.
Whatever, you know, sex someone has decided that they are. And so a lot of times what happens is they get surgically assigned a sex, and they're expected, like, you know, as the world is, for their gender to align to that. And for a lot of times, that's not always true. So there are people that, you know, their bodies have been permanently altered and surgically, and then on top of that, they've been given hormone treatments. And then when they're an adult, their gender doesn't align to that. And it's much harder for intersex people that have been subjected to these surgeries and these treatments to transition medically if that's something that they desire later on. And so to go back to your question of what kind of, you know, mental health treatments are there, the really, really unfortunate thing is that for a lot of times, once these surgeries are done, the doctors just kind of, you know, wash off their hands and say, well, they're fixed, they're healed, you know, they're fine now. Right. And they never check
that's
up.
That's disgusting.
On them, which is why that these community social and support groups and various different advocacy groups are so important. A friend of ours who is they are an intersex person and they're also a doctor, did one of the largest research studies done on intersex adults. And they found overall higher rates of self-harm. They found higher rates of suicidality, found higher rates of depression, of drug and alcohol abuse. So, I mean, it's also like, well, obviously, right? But there's never been any research on that.
Right.
Yeah. There's nobody's bothered really to follow up. And in the instances where they have followed up, we've seen research papers where doctors will review a very small sampling of people. It'll be like 12 who have had surgeries done on their bodies. And they say, you know, I have all these problems. I can't orgasm. I have constant UTIs. All of these other things. I'm unhappy.
Yeah.
I don't really feel comfortable in this gender. I don't really identify as a heterosexual person, and I'm expected to, like, all these other things.
Yeah.
Like, you read the research and you're like, okay, well, that sounds like that didn't turn out so well. But at the end, it still says blah, 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 successful, 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 because the concern is not about the person's overall life. General well-being and life.
Or their mental health or anything like that.
Does this person's body now look binary? Are they capable of having heterosexual sex regardless of whether they want to or enjoy it? And that's about it. Mm-hmm. So those are some very large issues. And it's one of the things that when I educate, it's always, always, because I talk about this all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Like I seem like it's, you know, it's like I'm talking about a movie that I saw the other day.
Well, no, like you're talking to this is clearly something that hurts you. Like right. I can just see it like in your face.
But I forget.
Yeah.
That there are people that have number one never heard of it, and then number two, like sometimes when I have to step back and like remove the educator hat and think about it as like general population, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
I'm a movie person. I also like run a film festival and do other things.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I think that film has a great way of showing how people feel about certain things in ways that maybe they don't verbalize. And I found that in film, forced quote unquote sex changes happen really for one of two reasons. It's either done as torture or it's done as revenge.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that we're doing to babies. People, we're doing them to infants.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it seems like something that would be, you know, people should be like really, really protesting and doing all these things for. You should be angry about it. And there are people that are very angry about it, but like when we are presenting legislation, we always get pushback from like parents groups. Oh, it's parents' rights. Parents should have the right to do this. You know, like all these other things.
Yeah.
And so it's like,
non-consensual from the actual infant.
You're doing it on an infant. Are you serious?
And it doesn't like, it's not a defect or anything. It won't cause them any issues.
No.
If you don't, you do anything. You just let them be, you know?
So there's, when we talk about these surgeries, we're also very, very clear that we are talking about healthy tissue.
Right.
So very, very rarely, there is a form of CAH, which is congenital adrenal hyperplasia, which does need medical intervention at birth, because it's a salt wasting type. The child will die, but that intervention does not involve any sort of genital cosmetic surgery.
Right.
The only other real issue at birth is if someone is born without like a urinary opening, so that they're not able to pass urine. Again, you don't have to change, you know, the overall functionality appearance of someone's genitalia to, you know, create a urinary opening, or like if someone's bladder is on the outside of their body. But all of those things don't necessarily, you don't need to do any sort of cosmetic surgery on someone's genitalia.
Right.
You know, so there's really no medical need. Now, the other thing that we get some pushback for is, a lot of doctors will say, specifically for people that are born with testes on the inside of their body, that they need to be removed because they could become cancerous. The rate of cancer is not that much higher than the general public. But I also like to put out there that, like, if there is someone who has a history of, let's say, breast cancer or cervical cancer, urine cancer, whatever, in their family, when that child gets to be of puberty age, 8, 9, 10, 11, whatever, you don't just go and cut off their breasts and remove their, you know, give them a hysterectomy. Mm-hmm. You wait and you monitor it. You know, mm-hmm. you have this, you work with doctors and you monitor things and you stay on top of it. You don't just go and rip organs out.
Right.
So that's really what mm-hmm. we're advocating for is wait. Mm-hmm. So let's yeah. wait. If cancer is a concern, like right. you can monitor it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then you wait. And you wait until someone, if and when they want something done to affirm their gender or, you know, whatever mm-hmm. they want done for whatever reason. And then, you know, address it later.
Right.
Jeez. So I know that we just talked extensively about a lot of the issues that we're seeing surrounding the intersex community, not just like intra community, but like mostly at large. So really my question for you is, sorry, I'm just like thinking about like, I'm like kind of processing everything you just told me. And I'm just like, God, that really eats shit. Like I had a question. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, nope. I just got reminded about the mutilation on children. It's just really like,
I want to be like ready to fight as soon as we're done with this. I want to be like, give me all the numbers, who I need to call, like who I need to meet outside.
Yeah.
Who the fuck do I need to call?
So
now I remember my question. There you go.
It is also not uncommon for doctors to tell parents that their child has a hernia or has cancer, and then take the child into an OR and remove their gonads.
Do they do it like right then and there? Yes.
And then they get the child back and they're like, oh, your child's fine.
So
that's specific, that kind of scenario is specific to AIS, what's called androgen insensitivity syndrome. Mm-hmm. That's when someone has XY chromosomes. They mm-hmm. have a vulva. They usually either have like a very mm-hmm. small vaginal opening. They don't have a uterus and they have internal testes. Mm-hmm. But they'll say, oh, your child has cancer, or, oh, your child has a hernia, and they go and do surgery and just cut out the gonads and say, okay, they're fine now.
I have a friend who's, like, in med school. I'm going to text him and be like, don't fucking do this shit on my watch.
Well, and so, as you can imagine also, yeah. like, there's that, there's a trust issue mm-hmm. then. So a lot of intersex folks, they have hesitation about even seeing like a general practitioner. You know, so some folks usually, you know, sometimes the parents honestly didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And they find out later as well. But sometimes the parents are told to not tell the child growing up that they had mm-hmm. this.
Oh, right.
That they were, you know, that they were born intersex or that they had this procedure done. and so that creates also later on in life that trust issue between an intersex adult and their parent.
Mm-hmm.
So when we started our organization mm-hmm. and we had that intention of being like a social and support group, I had people come up to me, and I still do mm-hmm. sometimes, and they will tell me their whole life story mm-hmm. and then be like, but I don't want to be involved in the group. I just want to live my life. Like they still want to stay hidden because there's safety in that. And there's still a lot of shame and stigma about,
mm-hmm.
you know, really embracing intersex or like this otherness. Right.
Yeah. Right.
So some of those stories though, and we kind of talked about, and this will kind of bring us back around into like the LGBT mm-hmm. kind of thing.
Yeah.
I've had a few instances where like, someone will come up to me and say, I just came out to my parents as a trans woman. And my dad said, oh, that makes sense. We had your, you know, your uterus removed when you were, you know, whatever. Were born, basically you were born intersex and we had to make this decision and we had them sew up your vulva, you know, kind of thing. And it is absolutely devastating for somebody.
God.
Not just because, like, coming out to your parents as trans mm-hmm. is hard enough, right? And then you're told you get this gut punch. And it's this, like, you're not who you thought you were. And everything that everyone has ever told you your entire life is a lie. Like, how much of a mind fuck that is for people. Yeah,
right.
And then, you know, there are other instances where, you know, there's a million different versions of the same story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you have other people that find out later in life or, you know, various other things. But there's always some sort of more or less medicalized trauma that happens.
Yeah.
And if it hasn't happened when we're younger, it happens when we're older because there are no standards of care for intersex mm-hmm. people. And it is incredibly difficult to access competent care for us. The other thing that's difficult is that sometimes when we're trying to obtain HRT, so mm-hmm. like hormones or gender affirming mm-hmm. care later on mm-hmm. in life, doctors want to default us to trans models of care,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
don't always work for our bodies. So we need really specialized care.
Mm-hmm.
For example, someone who has a partial androgen insensitivity syndrome, who has had surgical procedures done on mm-hmm. their body and has had hormone producing gonads removed, who has been forced mm-hmm. to take estrogen, who now identifies as male, who needs testosterone,
right.
their body doesn't process testosterone mm-hmm. completely. But if doctors put them on the typical, like, F to M 0.5 cc's mm-hmm. of testosterone cypionate,
mm-hmm.
their body is going to aromatize most of that into estrogen.
Oh, fuck.
So it's this issue of, like, we need doctors that are going to actually know how to take care of us. But also, and it's the kind of the same thing. Like, the trans people, a lot of times trans people go in and have to educate their own doctor. But you still face this hierarchy of the doctor really believing they know more about you and your body than you do.
Yeah.
But then you have to sit down and spend the first three, you know, sessions with them educating them about your body.
It's bullshit.
Yeah.
So, absolutely. So, that's one of the difficult things that our community also has in facing,
mm-hmm.
you know, trying to get competent medical care. Even as an educator, it's really, really difficult to go into a medical space where there's that assumed hierarchy, right? And try to access care and struggle with doctors who think that they know more about my body,
mm-hmm.
but also facing that, like, curiosity of, like, doctors wanting to do unnecessary examinations on me. I had a doctor that refused flat out to address, it was like a gastrointestinal issue, until I consented to blood work because she wanted to know whether or not I had a prostate and tried to force me to do a prostate exam. Totally
what
unrelated.
What?
I'm under 40. I'm not having any problems with that. Like, there's no medical reason.
But you didn't need to do that.
To even want to check on it.
Fucking yikes.
So there's layers to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so complicated.
And the thing with medical practitioners is, like, if it's not the intersex community, it's black women, you know? Or it's, you know, they just don't give a fuck about the marginalized people. And it's like, you're paying all this money and you're getting paid stacks to, like, neglect these people because you think that, you know, I guess you're taught this binary thing, especially in education and school. It started from the bottom, you know, like,
right. And it is so awesome that you brought that up because that goes hand in hand as well. Like, people of color within the intersex community have that additional layer of knowing that, like, black folks, specifically black women
mm-hmm.
and native women, have that history of medicalized violence and experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that layered on top of that. The intersex community has a history of experimentation as well,
mm-hmm.
You know, but it is even compounded more.
Right.
For our communities of color. And so, like, for the most part, the intersex activism and advocacy is usually done by white women with AIS.
Mm.
And so that's one of the larger, like, really, really complicated things to address. Like,
mm-hmm.
as a person of color, like, as someone who, is gender fluid, you know, like all of the, I am the absolute counter image to the poster child, you know, and I'm weird. Like I'm an artist. I have a very alternative appearance. So I have to work so much harder through all of the respectability politics and everything else.
Right.
To even be considered that I know what I'm talking about. But that's one of the other things too, is like, we do have, like, if you're listening and you do want to hear about more about intersex stuff, when you do searches, please, please, please search for like the people of color that are intersex, because those stories are super, super important and they don't get heard nearly as much. We're not given as much platform and we're, and that also is intersectional with things like poverty, right? How hard it is to access competent medical care already when you are a poor person, if you're on Medicaid, right? Like, how do you, and a lot of times people in our community will say, oh, well, you know, you have this one doctor and they're not nice to you. So you say, you're not going to be my doctor and you go to somebody else.
That's not easy.
Not everybody can do that. No. If you're going to a charity clinic, you don't have that.
No,
that option, no. You know,
that privilege is not there.
And we also know that in communities of color, they address surgeries and bodies differently, which is weird. Which is weird. And also, like, noting anti-blackness, racism, like all of these things are
coincide. Yeah.
Yeah, they coincide and they don't get talked about nearly as much. So that is also very, very important. The issue of immigration. Refugees and asylum seekers. We talked about countries where there's infanticide. There are countries where being intersex is grouped into the LGBT, and LGBT is illegal. It's punishable by either
death, prison.
Imprisonment or death, right? So you have people who are intersex, who are being lumped in as that, who are fleeing for their lives, and the UN does not recognize intersex as asylum worthy.
I mean, they're they go out and fucking rape people, as we know that.
So we know people that are in this situation where, like, they're desperate to get away from the country that they live in, and the UN has basically said, well, you're not. This is not this is not something that we recognize. Sorry.
Yeah, and it's like, you can't run this organization that only, you know, sees an individual as a monolith. You know, it's like, people hold multitudes and they carry all these different intersections, you know? And I guess that's what the main issue is like, when we're looking at this binary issue and this homogenous thing that we want to fucking try to fix, when, you know, not everyone's the same. You can't do that. You know?
I think Indisha had earlier. I just didn't want to cut off
Kuma. About how, how, when looking up stuff about people that are intersex, putting the POC part is really important, because I was going to say that the first time that I ever heard anything about people that are intersex was from the show Faking It. It was on MTV. And the character that was intersex was like the blonde femme cheerleader. And she had a very interesting narrative, and it was very interesting, but that was still her. That it still was like, yeah, she, but she's still blonde and, like, just not, you know, really struggling that hard. I feel like she had to actually expose that part of herself to get that, you know? I'm basically saying, like, you know, that was the only time I've ever even heard of it on MTV. It was just backtracking. Sorry, my bad.
No, you're cool.
What's the interesting thing about that show is that they actually did work with Interact, which is another intersex organization.
Right.
Oh, cool.
So all of the stuff that they presented was pretty accurate for that, at least the content. But you're right. And for the most part, that is kind of the picture that we do see the most for, for intersex.
Yeah, this is
Seriously, this has been amazing. I've never known a lot of this stuff. You really have taught us a lot.
So, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap up here in a second, but I had one more question for you before.
All right.
Because I know we could, like, talk, like, forever about this. I can honestly listen to you forever. Yeah, seriously, I'm just like, I'm
learning. All right, so let's do a part two.
Yeah, right, part two. I know that we talked really extensively about how there's so many issues, both from the community and from the medical field, like when it comes to the intersex community, but are you at least seeing some kind of positive progress?
Yeah. Or what would you like to also see if you're not?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so yes and no. So I was very fortunate to collaborate with some other intersex activists of color last year. And we did a protest at Lurie. Oh, no, wait. That was this year. That was earlier this year.
Oh, my God. 2018 feels like so long.
At Lurie Children's Hospital in Chicago, which is actively still doing surgeries on intersex infants. So in 96 or 98, was the very first time that intersex people organized and did a protest. It was in Boston. It was outside of the American Academy of Pediatrics Conference. And the intersex community collaborated with the trans community. So it was a group called Hermaphrodites with Attitude a group called the Transsexual Menace. And they had a collaborative protest. It had been over 20 years since we had had a public protest. A little bit earlier... in the year, there was a much smaller protest at Lurie organized by the two activists that we worked with. So there was an intersex conference in the area, and you know, it was, we ended up having one of the largest protests to date. So we are seeing more people, intersex and not, willing to organize and to be visible. So that's number one.
For the cause, right?
Right. Number two, it is very difficult to change the minds of doctors that have been in the field, especially those who have been doing these surgeries for years and years and years. And I think a lot of it has to do with people just not wanting to admit fault and that what they're doing is harmful and not best practices. So we get a lot of pushback. However, I've had the opportunity to speak to several med students, and that is where the change is happening. And it's when we go in and we do education and we do panels and we have people in medical school who they may have one chapter on intersex where it's just a blip. And it's still using terms like pseudo-hermaphrodite and talking about surgeries being best practices. And then they have intersex people actually come in and educate and bring all this new material in. That's where we're seeing the change. And we're seeing people that are more willing to challenge what they're being taught. Or say, you know, we did the test and I had to answer this way to pass, but I'm never doing that. If I encounter, I encounter, you know, an intersex infant, I'm going to do, you know, this instead.
Right.
So that is what's helpful. We're doing, I am, actively working with another activist to do legislation, which is small. It's specific to kids in state care, but like, those are little baby steps. So there's these little things. Now, if other people want to get involved, the best thing you can do is to support support us. Like, we don't really have, like, meetings. We'll have different events throughout the year. Come to our events.
This is specifically for the Houston
Intersex Society. Okay. Right, okay. If you're local. So you can come to our events. We participate in Pride. We're probably one of the smallest groups there. But please, like, you know, there, it is kind of when we talked about, like, shame and stigma, a lot of people don't want to be visible. So we really, really need allies that are going to be visible for the people who can't. So that's also important. And then the other thing, and it's the thing that, you know, everybody's kind of like, oh, you know. donate money.
But yeah, I was like, pay up.
Yeah, pay up. Seriously, pay up.
You know, and that's like, the Houston Intersex Society is two people. It's two people.
Right.
We're doing trips to Austin when it's, you know, well, again, let me clarify. The Houston Intersex Society is two people, at least running the organization. We're doing trips. We've done trips to Austin. We've done trips. We recently did a trip to Lake Charles to visit an intersex person in the hospital who had never been in a room with other intersex people before. It's so, like, we're doing outreach in both locally and in
grassroots style,
and in other states, like in the South. We've organized a Southern regional meetup. So, like, we had people from several different states come. But there's only one organization that has an intersex fund. And it's every intersex group in the U.S. and other countries vying for this, the same little bit of funding, you know. So any funding that's available is helpful because it costs money to do the work we're doing. Now, again, a little note, when we're talking about legislation, that is individual work. That is not work done by our organization, because we are a nonprofit and we're not allowed to do that. So we don't do that as the organization. We do that as individual intersex people on our own.
Got it.
But, you know, that's... And it's always so difficult to ask for support, you know, financially. But
No, fucking pay up.
If, if you have the means, like if you have the time, volunteer. Come be a part of stuff. You know, if you have funds, you know, if you're a person that has that, help with however you can help. And the you know, the other thing is, if you hear things, you know, you can, hopefully, you've learned a little bit and you can educate other people. So the only other thing that there is we talked a little bit about, like, intersex within LGBT and, like, some of those difficulties. So one of the big difficult things is that frequently, I'm not even going to say frequently, sometimes...
There are times.
There are times when people will use the existence of intersex people to validate transness.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And then I see what you're saying.
Kind of gatekeep.
And, oh my. Yeah. That was me hitting the microphone with my hand. I'm very expressive when I speak. But then they stop at our existence. They don't talk about the issues that we face. They don't advocate for the needs of our community. They don't bring in intersex people to speak for ourselves. And so it's kind of the same thing, right? Like, if your event says LGBT, but you don't have, the T is not really there, and the T has nothing to do with the T, don't put the T on there. If your event says LGBTQI, and there's nothing about the I in there, and you don't have any I people there to speak about it, just don't put it on there. But please, please, please don't just use our existence.
Or for clout. Don't do stuff for clout.
Someone else's existence.
For social capital. Don't do it.
Yeah. The clout.
Because there's yes, we exist, but holy shit, we, you know, we're trying really hard to bring awareness to this. When our existence gets reduced down to just like, oh, they exist, we have nobody supporting us, and you know, it is already a very isolating and lonely existence for a lot of people. But then to see it, you know, just like that, we need support. You know.
Yeah, seriously.
That's, thanks for coming on.
This has seriously been definitely one of the most educational episodes that I've ever been a part of. Thank you so much for spending, like, having this space open and spending your time to talk to not only us, but the people that listen to our show. I definitely appreciate you just, like, expelling that energy. Like, I'm so grateful. This is really, really eye-opening for sure.
Yeah, like, I just want to express, like, I know that you as an educator, you have to, like, expel so much of your own mental an emotional mm-hmm. space. So thank you for doing that for
us.
Sure.
Because
I know that's not easy sometimes. Like, I know right. that when people ask me about my non-binary identity, I'm just like...
Today.
Today. So thank you. Seriously, yeah. from the bottom of our hearts, thank mm-hmm. you so much for coming onto the show.
Yeah, and
I mean, if you want to come back.
There's so much more about you that we...
We do a part two. We right. do a part yeah. three.
And then you can bring on your partner, your sure. business partner.
Yeah.
I'm down.
Yay! But with that...
Do you have anything to plug? What are the organizations? Where can we find you? And
oh, yeah, tell us.
So we can send you money. And oh, yeah, okay. let us.
Yes. So if you want to contact us, you can contact the Houston Intersex Society at thehoustonintersexsociety@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/HOUINTER, or just search for the Houston Intersex Society. On our page, we actually have QR codes on our Facebook banner that you can scan with your phone and become a sustaining donor. Which is very, very appreciated.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yay. Okay. Yeah.
We'll do that. Thank you so much again for coming.
Thank you.
I also want to say happy holidays to everybody. Mm-hmm. Hope it's a happy
one. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And also now we're
a part of Spectrum South.
Yeah. If y'all didn't hear that.
Yeah. Woo! We're so excited to actually be a part of that partnership. And we're excited to see where that can go with the podcast. Mm-hmm. I think this is actually our last episode.
We're wrapping up this. Yeah. We'll probably have one.
Maybe
a little bit.
We'll see if we feel like it. No, yeah. I'm kidding. But this is our last official episode before we move on with Spectrum South. So, if you don't hear from us, we will see you in 2019.
Yeah.
But with that, don't forget to find us on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow us on our Twitter. That we need to do a better job of updating. Yeah. It's veer_queerhtx, or find us on our Facebook at podcast. Sorry, Veer Queer Podcast, not Veer Queer Own Podcast.
Indie.
You could always change the name.
Yeah, right. And with that, I've been
Jordan. Bye.
And we will see you later. Bye.
Bye.